Hi, today's October 7th, 2018. This is MobileViews Podcast 271. Tyler Gossard, my good friend John Westfall. We have a whole bunch of stuff on our list of things to talk about, but nothing super interesting.
You would look at this and you would think that we would not be able to fill a half hour,
and yet,
but somehow we probably will be able to.
Yeah.
That being said, this will now be like the first 15-minute podcast we've recorded. So, you want to start off talking about new Surface stuff?
No? I don't want to, but that's what we've got.
Oh. That's what you put on the list.
I know. I almost didn't put it on the list because I was so underwhelmed by the Microsoft announcements this past week. But
you're the thing I play. I'm the color commentary, so you don't want to talk about it. You know, we don't have to.
But I thought, well, John might have a few things to say about this, so maybe I'll just list them and see what John has to say. So the first thing that struck me was when they announced, let me rephrase that. When the Surface Pro 6 and the Surface Book 2 are announced, the thing all the various tech pundits seem to be talking about was it has a new color, matte black.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's such a big deal. Not really.
Yeah.
What I want from a Surface, so I have a Surface for work, you have a Surface for work.
I do.
What I would like is that it be lighter and thinner.
Yeah.
I want them to take a step out of the Apple playbook. Make it the same feature set, upgrade the processor, RAM, everything, the normal everyday evolutionary things.
Yeah.
But the revolutionary thing I want from the Surface line is not a new color.
Oh.
The revolutionary thing I want is lighter and thinner.
You know, that's an interesting point. And also, I would also like a lighter charging block.
That's true.
It isn't
big, but it's not as big as Microsoft is capable of.
Yeah, it's blocky is what it is.
Yeah.
And so when I carry my, and because my Surface Pro 4 has terrible battery life, it probably lasts maybe an hour and a half these days. I have to carry my charger anytime I go somewhere. In fact, I can't take my Surface Pro 4 out of the charger when I leave for the weekend because when I come back, it'll be like 0%. And if I have to go to a meeting that morning, there's, and I don't have an AC outlet, I'm dead. Mm-hmm. So I have to, and it's not a good idea. I know that. I know it's not good to leave something charging continuously. But still, that's what I want. Oh, I guess better battery life.
Yeah, better battery life and, do all the evolutionary stuff, but make it thinner and lighter, and then it actually competes with an iPad.
Right. Also, get rid of the fuzzy cover. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's that'd ridiculous. Be nice too.
That thing just picks up dust.
Now, one of the things that we've talked about in recent weeks that I was thinking about that this reminded me of, we were talking about Surfaces and how you might not have a Surface when you next get refreshed.
Yes.
I have no idea what I'll have. But I do know that our chief information officer at the location I work told me about a year ago, I noticed he wasn't using a Surface anymore. He was using a Dell tablet that was very similar to a Surface.
Okay.
I said, well, why did you switch? And he says, he looks at me and goes, the Surface hard drives aren't removable.
Hmm.
And I thought about it. He goes, so we can't dispose of them. When we, when something dies, we can't just take the hard drive out and sell off the hardware and then dispose of the drive.
Right.
It's a real problem that we're probably not going to stay with the Surface line because of. And, I assume there's a way to get that thing out. It's an SSD. If you rip the thing open and... But you probably have to, be very careful with that. It's not what we would think of as a removable drive.
No, it's not.
So
I'm not even sure where it is.
I'm not sure Microsoft really thinks too much about, but definitely people who are in corporate IT think about that quite a bit.
Yeah.
So that might be why you are not going to get another Surface. And it might be why my group is moving away from Surfaces and more toward the Dell tablets. That and the Surface showed Dell and others, hey, make this and people will buy it.
Right.
So, I don't know. Microsoft accomplished that goal. Who knows if they need to keep making Surfaces. I do know today that if I didn't have my work Surface and I needed a Windows laptop, I probably would get a Surface Pro 6 because I've been pretty happy with my Surface Pro 4.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Other competitors are going to start doing things that are decent competition. Microsoft needs to stop underwhelming.
Right. And that said, for enterprises, there are, I don't know if they're certified, but some kind of official mechanism to dispose securely dispose devices. It's not cheap. You know, it can, if you have a lot of machines, it can run into tens of thousands of dollars or even hundreds of thousands of dollars to properly dispose, securely dispose devices. So yeah, it is a problem.
Yeah, we're out of the days where you could just take a hammer to the hard drive and be done with it. But
Or a giant magnet.
Yeah. So I like that the Surface line continues, unlike, you know, the Mac Mini. Or the iPad Mini. I mean, we have no idea if those are going to continue on. So I like that about it, but I was not very over, and I was not very whelmed with the Pro 6 and the Surface Book 2.
Yeah. The Surface Studio, the big, giant, flat, kind of architect, drawing board-style PC was upgraded to Surface Studio 2.
New things to play with at the Microsoft Store, because I think that's the only time I've seen one of those in action.
I've never seen one in person.
I've never heard anyone buy one.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we have a fairly diverse group of friends who like to buy things that are cool.
Yeah.
And no one has said, yeah, I bought a Surface Studio.
Yeah. I actually have a friend who did buy one locally, but I haven't visited him since his purchase, whenever that was. But
just felt like that meant that he was losing his mind and that he could stay away.
But, yeah, it's kind of one of those big, expensive display, all-in-one PC-type designs, and I think it sounds cool. I'd like to have one as a drawing table, but it's just way too expensive, and quite frankly, the original Surface Studio's performance was underwhelming, as I recall. I think it had, like, a slow, you know, 5,500 RPM hard drive versus solid state, and it, I think, it had a slowish i5, so it was not really a desirable device for, you know, high-end graphics. Okay, now the thing that next thing that a lot of people seem to be excited about and I don't understand are the Surface headphones. Let me say that again clearly. Surface headphones, not Surface phone, which was not announced. So they're giant over-the-ear cans-type design. And I think when you take them off, they turn off, which is something the AirPods do, I think. I don't know. Why are people excited by this, John? Oh, it's also $350.
Yeah, so that's the same price as the Beats Solo 3s that I'm wearing right now for audio, for listening to the podcast. Mm-hmm. After being chastised, I'm using a better microphone than what's in my Beats Solo 3s. But for that much money, actually, I think the Beats Solo 3s are cheaper by about $50. For that much money, I don't really see a real need. I mean, Cortana... I don't even use Cortana in all the other places I could be using Cortana. So, yeah. Great if you need a set of headphones. Not sure they have that same killer integration like the AirPods and the Go 3s have with the Apple W1 chip, where you basically can pull it down from any of your devices and connect up to it instantly. You don't have to repair and all of that. That's... In my mind, that makes it really a smart pair of headphones, not being able to talk to Cortana. But I guess if you really hate the Apple ecosystem or really don't have any love in any other headset, go for it, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I know a fella at work who uses an Android phone. I think he has a Samsung Galaxy 9 or something. And he uses the AirPods with it. So even if you're not an Apple ecosystem guy, you can still use them.
As long as you're not militant about it.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I've met people that they'll love a product and then it says Apple or Google or Microsoft and all of a sudden it's the worst product they've ever seen.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So, you know, if you're not militant about your branding, then I guess you could mix and match.
Yeah. The biggest problem for me with any of these can-type designs, you know, the over-the-ears giant headphones, you know, kind of 1960s, 1970s design, is that in Hawaii, where I live, it's just way too hot to wear those things.
Yeah, I understand that, because even though my Beats Solo 3s are on-ear headphones, so they don't fully go over, they do heat up my ears quite a bit. And I was on the phone earlier today using these, and I was on the phone for about an hour and a half, and it was nice to take them off after an hour and a half.
Yeah, because it's not only hot, but they put pressure on your side of your head. Okay, and the last thing that I kind of thought was interesting at first, and then now I don't really care about, is they announced that sometime in the near future, Windows 10 is going to gain the ability to do app mirroring for both Android and iOS apps on Windows 10. So you can cast your app display and presumably use the keyboard and things to your Windows 10 device. Is this at all interesting to you?
I don't know why I need to do that.
That was, you know, it's
you know? Kind of,
I know, right? Unless you have some visual, a slight visual impairment, and you would like to see something on a bigger screen.
I like going the other direction. You know, I have VNC on my laptop so that I can connect to it from my phone if I need to, you know, control something or check on the progress of something from somewhere else in the house. But I don't really need to mirror stuff from my iPhone up to a big screen very often. And if I do, I have this product called an iPad.
Yeah.
That seems to, and it works because it's designed for that display.
Yeah.
Anytime you put something up, I know that when I run the iOS simulator on my MacBook, it's way too big for daily use. It's great if you're debugging, but it's not that great if you would just want to use the app. So.
Yeah. And with the understanding that not everybody wants to own both a Windows device and an iPad, or a Windows device and a Chromebook, you know, if this is something important to you, instead of just app mirroring, you can get a Chromebook that runs Android apps on the Android side of the world. Is it perfect? No, but I suspect this app mirroring isn't going to be perfect either, so there you go. Okay, so the only thing that's even... Man, there's nothing interesting announcements to me. There's not a single thing I want to buy or ask my workplace to buy for me or anything. Okay. Next up are announcements we're expecting, and that's on Tuesday, October 9th. Today's October 7th. Google is supposed to have a whole bunch of hardware announcements. I'd kind of like to poll John on what he finds interesting. I know you've been kind of thinking about getting an Android device, and the Pixel 3 and 3 XL are said to be announced on Tuesday. Your thoughts?
Yeah, so it's a tough one. I have been tempted by getting a Pixel 3 just to have a modern Android device to play with.
Yeah.
But then recently a new temptation came into my life, and that was every time I see people who have a Wi-Fi plus cellular enabled iPad, they always tell me that it revolutionizes your life. It's like the best
people
thing
tell
ever.
Me that too.
And I've never had a cellular enabled iPad.
Me too.
And I could add it to my current plan. I have unlimited data with Verizon, so it would just be the $10 a month additional device fee.
Right.
So I was thinking, you know, what would I rather have? A Pixel 3, which would be another device for me to carry every day. And yes, it would be fun to play with, but how much would I actually use it? Or when the iPads are refreshed, getting a new iPad Pro with cellular and using that. And I don't really know at this point. I might be leaning more toward the iPad. So Google better have something pretty freaking awesome to sway it back, because it's very tempting to have an always-on cellular connection on my iPad, because I do tether quite a bit through my phone on my iPad, and there's some issues with that. I found that the automatic turning on of hotspot doesn't always work really great. It's great if the devices can physically see each other, but if one's in my pocket and the other is in my hand, sometimes the connection isn't strong enough to turn on the remote hotspot. So I might go that direction, but I'll leave it open to see what I see on October 9th.
That's interesting because, you know, I have to retract what you just said. I actually do have an iPad 2 that has Verizon LTE built in, a radio built in, although it's never been activated. And the only reason I bought it is I think I was still a full-time blogger when it came out. And I needed to have one. And the only thing available at the Apple Store after standing in line for, you know, like 2 hours was an iPad 2 with Verizon LTE. So I just bought it and never turned it on. So, yeah. And it was okay. I mean, you know, back then I was getting paid to do this stuff. So I was okay with that. Okay, next up on the things that we expect to be announced on Tuesday the 9th, October 9th, is the Google Home Hub Smart Display. Now, Smart Display is already out. I bought a Lenovo 2 months ago, I guess, now. Really enjoying it. It's the 10 point something. I think it's 10 inches or 10.1 something. This one is supposed to be a little smaller, like 7 or 8 inches, so it's going to be presumably a little bit less expensive than the one I bought, which was, I think I paid $220, and it came with a free Google Home Mini. So now I have two Google Home Minis I don't use, by the way. The first one came with my Pixel, by the way, my Pixel 2 that I bought last year. So Google Smart Home Display? Thoughts, John? Mm-hmm. Tempted? If it's under $200?
I don't know. It's one of those things that I've never really thought I would enjoy, and I haven't been able to play with one to see. So yeah. Sounds cool in theory, not on my to-buy list.
I have to say, you know, having not been a big Google Home Mini fan, and I've had a Google Home Mini since last year, and I bought my Pixel 2, I really like the smart display. Even though the casting, which is the best feature to me, you know, so you grab your phone and you're rummaging around, you know, like mine is kind of accessible from where our lanai is, so I can, you know, if I'm cleaning up in there, I can, or over out there, I should say, I can turn it on and listen to, you know, YouTube news of various kinds or entertainment, whatever. So it's really kind of fun to cast from my phone to the smart display to get a... It's not reliable, though. That's the only thing. You know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I haven't quite figured out why it works sometimes. Sometimes it works from one phone, but not from the other. I don't understand that either. But I like it. Okay. Next up is the Pixelbook 2, which is a... I'm trying to remember. Pixelbooks are Chrome devices. Yeah, Chrome devices. Chrome OS devices. They're usually pretty expensive, like over $1,000. I don't expect John to be interested in this. I'm not. They're just way too expensive to be interesting to me. John?
You know, I was just thinking, messing with you for a minute, going, yes, yeah. I'm going to buy one immediately, but no, I have no interest.
Okay, the next one I am really interested in, and that's the Pixel Slate, which is a 2-in-1 Chromebook. Basically, it means it has a detachable keyboard or can have a detachable keyboard. It's kind of like an iPad running Chrome OS. And these days, at least, Chrome OS can run Android apps. I don't think 100%, but pretty close. And Chrome OS, kind of recent vintage Chromebooks, can also run Linux apps in a container. So they have Linux app containers, which is kind of cool. I mean, you know, if you ever wanted to run Emacs or, you know, run some scripting tools, you know, run Python, you know, whatever, I assume you can do that in these Linux containers. And I'm going to say if it's under 700, let's call it $699. I'm really tempted to get one because I'm really happy with the Samsung Chromebook Plus I've been using for about a year and a half now. And I kind of want to play with Linux containers, but I'm not sure if the Chromebook Plus is quite enough resources to run Linux apps comfortably, so I haven't turned that feature on, although it is supported.
It's amazing how an operating system that will run on pretty much a toaster,
yeah,
in some cases, has app like heavy app requirements when you're running it containered.
Well, I'm not sure it does.
Very strange about Linux.
Yeah, I'm not saying that it has heavy whatever. I'm just a little bit leery to turn it on and find out, oh, man, now my system's a pig and I can't quite turn it off the way I want to. You know, one of those kind of situations. So I just haven't turned it on at all. I'm just going to wait until I hear what Tuesday announcements and see if I'm going to buy something. But, and the other question is whether this Pixel Slate is going to come with a keyboard or is it going to be a optional purchase, you know, like when you buy a Surface Pro I don't know about the Surface Book, but when you buy a Surface Pro, the keyboard is optional. You got to spend another $100-something for it. And the pen is optional, right? The Surface Pen is optional. That's another $100.
Yep.
So if and I should note the Samsung Chromebook Plus, which is a foldable design, so you can run it as a slate, but the keyboard folds in the back. So the keyboard obviously comes with it, you know, it's physically attached. It's not detachable. And it also comes with a pen, which is not bad. I think it's passive. It's not a active pen like the Apple Pencil or Surface Pen. But if this comes with if the Pixel Slate comes with a keyboard, a detachable keyboard, and a stylus of some kind for, like I said, under $700, I think I'm really going to be interested in this. So we'll find out on Tuesday.
So the Pixel Slate is the thing that might tempt you, and the Pixel 3 is the thing that might tempt me.
Okay. And the last two things I just kind of list there for completeness. There's the Chromecast 3. Absolutely no interest at all to me. I have the original Chromecast, which, you know, I thought was pretty good. But I don't know where it is actually right now. I think I have two of them. I just don't know where they are. And
they're somewhere plotting against.
Somewhere. And also the Pixel Buds 2, which is, you know, the wireless Bluetooth earbud that first came out, the Pixel Bud 1, I guess, came out last year. Its big deal was that it was tightly integrated with Pixels, so you could do near real-time language translation on the fly. It didn't get very good reviews last year, although I know somebody who bought one's really happy with it, so, you know, people who have them are okay with it, I guess. Maybe just reviewers who didn't like it. But, you know, I'm still waiting for AirPod 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too.
And in fact, but because my Bluetooth head earbuds are going bad, I actually did buy an Anker Bluetooth set of Bluetooth earbuds with the over-the-ear hooks. They're buds, but they have over-the-ear hooks so they don't fall off, which is kind of one of my concerns about the AirPod. So anyway, these are like $35. So I don't have a real. I think they'll be fine. To replace two misbehaving Bluetooth headsets, which is weird. You know, by the way, you remember I told you that the AirPod like no wires between them $35 Bluetooth earbuds my daughter had to fly back from, or I had to send it to her in Oregon and she flew back home with it last Christmas, so that I, because they don't ship to Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
They worked for a couple of months with my iPhone 7 Plus, and then basically one ear cut off, and I mean, my ears are fine. The one earbud sound cut off. Yeah, my ears are still attached.
Yeah, if your ear was cut off, you wouldn't have to worry too much.
Then they wouldn't fit at all, but anyway, they're getting really flaky, they're dropping out, and so I kind of stopped using them. When I got the 10S, I started using them, and for about a day or two, they're working fine, and then they started cutting off, and so I just tried to. So I stopped using with that, which is why I bought new Bluetooth earbuds. But I did try them with my iPad Pro 9.7. And it works fine with that. At least, you know, for the first 2 days or so. So we'll see if it degrades over time. I'm not sure why. And I have done things like unpaired it and repaired it to see if it's some kind of weird pairing problem. But don't know. Okay, a couple of small items that I thought were interesting. So Opera, for those of you who might remember Opera, has a new browser called Opera Touch for the iPhone. And it has a built-in ad blocker and crypto jacking protection. And it sounds kind of interesting, except here's my concern. Opera was purchased by the Chinese investors in 2016. So how really safe is it? You know, I have not installed it. I'm kind of tempted to try it, but quite frankly, I bought some ad blockers for my phone, and I've got a VPN, a paid VPN, which is, you know, getting less and less useful as people block VPNs. You know, like Netflix blocks VPNs, or has been blocking VPNs for several months now. So my original plan to watch Star Trek Discovery from using the Australia server doesn't work anymore. And in fact, Spectrum, you know, formerly Charter/Time Warner, also blocks VPNs for the remote control. So, you know, if I'm sitting in Starbucks or standing in Starbucks and waiting for my beverage, and I think, oh, I'd like to record Doctor Who or something, and I forgot to set it, I can't do it with a VPN on anymore and from a public Wi-Fi hotspot. So that kind of defeats everything. I'm really annoyed by this whole blocking.
It defeats VPN everything thing. Until the VPN technology gets better and it can't be as easily detected.
Yeah, well,
you know, different endpoints, and I think what we're eventually going to just see is a Tor-like interface for VPNing, where you can't really tell what it is. The packets kind of masquerade as something else, and they come out from a random place that you can't predict.
Right. Well, that can't happen soon enough. You know, I mean, it's not that I'm paranoid, except I just don't trust public Wi-Fi hotspots.
I'm paranoid in many ways, so you know, sometimes, you know, there's always two options when you're paranoid. Sometimes they're not after you, but sometimes they actually are.
Yeah, so, and you know what, it doesn't hurt to be suspicious.
That's true.
Yeah. Okay, next up, which another kind of security thing, and that is, I just learned the other day, I don't know how long this has been out, but Jigsaw, which is a Google subsidiary, has a DNS security app called Intra, I-N-T-R-A, Jigsaw Intra, for pre-Android OS 9 devices. So my Pixel 2 doesn't need it because I'm running OS 9. But, you know, when looking at it, I installed it just for the heck of it, to fuss with it a bit. And I really like it. So it's not a VPN. It's a private DNS. So, you know, it basically points to presumably Google's, what is it, 8888 DNS server. And it's supposed to protect you from DNS manipulation. And, you know, it protects you against phishing and malware. And it installs pretty easily. I really like the interface. It shows you, you know, what you've been talking to. Which you may not know, because, you know, when you go to a site, it may be talking to, you know, for example, banner servers and things. So if you've got an older Android device, it's really nice. Now, if you have a newer Android device, Google has private VPN built into Android OS 9, which you can turn on, and I guess you can point it to its own, although I don't know. But what I did is I pointed it to Cloudflare's private DNS server, which is 1.1.1.1, and there's a little blog item that I'll link to on the show notes and our blog show notes that points you to Cloudflare's blog showing you how to turn it on. And no, you don't just type in 1.1.1.1 and they explain why you don't do that. There's also a blog item on how to use it with the iPhone, but I haven't set it up on iPhone. It's a little bit more involved than iPhone, and I was just too lazy to do it. But I did turn it on my Pixel 2, and it seems to be working well. I think it's been on for about a week now, and I don't see any issues with it. And that's about it.
All I'm just sitting here is thinking, I want a vanity IP address. You know, 1.1.1.1. I assume other companies get, you know, the ones they want. I don't know what my vanity one would be. It would be kind of cool to take my phone number that I've had for almost 20 years and get that in some way, IP? But unfortunately that won't work in IP because I started off in the area code 440, so I'd have to get like 44 dot, you know.
Maybe an IPv6.
0 isn't going to work.
Maybe you could embed it in IPv6.
Ooh, yeah, maybe I'll be able to do that. That gives me hope. But... yeah, I like anything that increases security. I did a little bit of interesting security this week on my network, and so this is something that we don't have in the show notes, but I'll put it out as a way to do things for the ultra-paranoid.
Okay.
On my home network, I have a couple of TrueCrypt or VeraCrypt containers.
Yeah.
On my NAS that, you know, keep tax records and other stuff that... even though my NAS is private, I don't particularly... I want to have an extra level of security for them.
Right.
But it was always annoying to get access to them because you have to be at a computer for it. You know,
yeah.
There is software on iOS that will open VeraCrypt containers, but you have to copy the container to the iPad. And so if it's a dynamic container, you've got stuff going into it regularly or you're using stuff, you'd have to have a local copy. So what I did is, since my NAS runs a virtualization station and it has a Linux virtual machine that I use on it, I basically just set up that virtual machine to run a script that I can log in through SSH that will mount the TrueCrypt container and then share it out over server message block, SMB. So it basically shows up as a new share on my network. And I can connect to it, and then when I'm done, just go back in and turn it off, unmount it.
Right.
But it's sort of a way of jumping through. But the nice thing is now, if I'm traveling and I don't have my laptop with me, and I need to get into one of those shares, I can get to it easily through my VPN. Just connect to the VPN, mount the drive over regular Windows file sharing, and then access that share over the VPN, and then turn it all off when I'm done. So that's kind of a cool... workaround. If you've ever thought, gee, I wish I could access this, but it's not that convenient.
Right.
Just a little bit of command line scripting, and you're good to go.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Oh, and the last thing I wanted to note, since I guess I'd never turned screen time off on my XS after I bought it. So I just got my weekly report while John and I were talking. And according to this, my screen time usage was down 31% last week. for an average of 1 hour 53 minutes a day, which sounds like a lot to me, but I guess I do use my phone a lot. But I'm surprised, you know, I've only had my phone, what, a week now? 2 weeks? I don't know when I bought, you know. And I'm just surprised that I'm using it less. 31% less, which is significantly less than the week before. So I guess good for me. I guess I should be proud or something.
Isn't that ironic? We buy things that we intend to use to help us, and we get excited when we don't use them that much.
Yeah. Well, you know, there are people who, you know, have their phoneless weekends and things like that where they turn off their phones for the weekend and go back to nature or whatever it is they do. I'd probably have an anxiety attack if I did that.
Revert to nature. On my phone, last week, I was at 2 hours and 39 minutes per day.
Okay.
And that was up quite a bit. But I also, my most frequently used application was WhatsApp, and one of my friends was going through a rough patch last week. So that's probably why WhatsApp got a lot of use last week.
You know, I was just thinking, there's something wrong with my, with the, well, maybe it's not wrong, but the screen time usage is, and I guess I don't know what you consider screen time, because, you know, I listen to podcasts, and maybe it doesn't count. Maybe the screen is off when I'm listening to podcasts.
You know, I'm looking. I listened to a lot of podcasts last week on Friday.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to find Overcast. Overcast only shows that I used it for 8 minutes. So, yeah, really? it does not count into the calculations.
Okay. Yeah, because I think you have a very short commute. I think you can walk to work, if I recall. Or
yes.
That's an option at least for you.
Yes.
For me, well, I guess it's an option, except it takes 2 hours to walk to work. maybe a little longer the way I walk these days. But so when I drive to work, yes, I do use, you know, fossil fuels to get to work. I don't have a fancy-dancy electric car. But, you know, so I spend, 30 to 45 minutes a day going to work. That's one way. And I usually listen to an audiobook on the way to work. And coming home, which is shorter, despite the being the same distance but less traffic, you know, so it's probably about 30 minutes, 35 minutes. I usually listen to a podcast. So, generally speaking, I should have an hour and a half of phone usage, although I guess the screen is off technically, 8 to 5 days a week. But anyhow. So it's not that I'm not using the phone. I guess it's just I'm not looking at it for the vast majority of the time I'm using a phone, which I find interesting. All right, as John predicted, we use 34 minutes, 23 seconds of talk time, which will be slightly compressed after I get rid of our inter-sentence silences. We did it. So next week, I'm hoping one of our mutual friends will be able to drop by and share his thoughts on whatever it is Google announces this week, Tuesday. And so we'll be back to talk to you next time. Thanks to our fives of listeners. We appreciate you. Okay, bye.